Hello and welcome to Life, Lemons and the Law, a Clark Wilmot podcast series discussing life-changing experiences of all kinds with the people involved. We'll talk about the immediate consequences of those events, as well as the long-term, often very positive outcomes. On this episode, we have Christian Day and Damien Hopley from the Rugby Players Association. Damien, the founder of the RPA, and Christian are both former professional players, and we're going to talk about the psychological and the emotional impact of retiring from the game. In Damien's case, very abruptly through injury and without any official support network. So if I can get you both to introduce yourselves, Damien, you first, please.
Hi, I'm Damien Hopley, Group Chief Executive of the Rugby Players Association.
And Christian too, if you please.
Yeah, I'm Christian Day, and I am Head of Player Affairs at the Rugby Players Association.
Okay, so this is a podcast series about life-changing experiences, and you were both formerly professional rugby players, so your life-changing experience is the fact that you're not anymore. Christian, what are the best things about life as a professional rugby player? What are the highs that come to mind?
Yeah, professional sport, I mean, what's there not to love? You know, getting paid to play a game that you've played all your life, you were pretty good at it, and you get to run out on the weekend and to the adoration of the crowds. It's an amazing lifestyle. It's something that you're incredibly fortunate to get to do. First and foremost, very, very, very lucky to get paid to play a sport for a living.
Do you have one particular memory, or perhaps a couple, that stand out, the high point of your career, the thing that you remember most fondly?
Yeah, a good friend of mine now, who's actually just been made a DOR, always had a good saying that you don't really remember any individual moments beyond good people that you played with and the medals that you won along the way. So quite lucky to win a few medals along the way, but more than anything, you kind of remember those experiences, those teammates. It's more about the people for me, really, and those experiences you had together rather than any one moment on the pitch.
Damien, let me ask you about your playing career. Before you were injured, before you stepped away from playing the game, what did your future look like? What was the best case scenario in your head of how your years were going to pan out as a player?
Well, I guess I'd sort of been quite lucky, if I'm honest, Ed, because I'd sort of broken into the national team in the 1991 Grand Slam year. But I was also playing behind two quite talented individuals called Will Carling and Jeremy Guscott. So I sort of knew that perhaps my time would be limited. And then I did in 95. I went to the World Cup with England, age 25, and got my first test cap, was part of that squad. So I guess my sort of projected trajectory was, you know, they would step down, hopefully with a fair wind, I'd step into that role along with Phil de Glanville and sort of take on the next 4 years up into the 99 World Cup or even beyond. That was the plan. There's a great expression that man plans and God laughs. And then I actually got my injury in March 96 when I was captaining the Sevens team in Hong Kong. So, and that proved to obviously be the sort of beginning of the end. It was like a sort of 20-month process that ultimately led to me having to retire at the age of 27 from the game. And it was pretty much my year group. So I played England age grade rugby with Martin Johnson and under 18 level, who obviously went on to lift the Webb Ellis Trophy in 2003. Funnily enough, I was there that day, and it was a sort of really bittersweet moment because part of me was thinking, oh, I might have been there if I'd been fit, but part of me was also delighted for the fact that we'd actually won the first World Cup for a Northern Hemisphere side. So it was definitely not a straightforward trajectory.
The fact that you've raised that 2003 World Cup win shows the sliding doors moment. It's an awful phrase, but lives going in two separate directions based on one particular event. When did you know, post-injury, or perhaps in the moment of the injury, that dream future that you've just described wasn't going to happen?
So, weirdly, I never formally retired, so I'd like to declare at the age of 51, I'm not going to make a comeback. Eddie, I'm sorry, but you're going to have to do without me for 2023. But I knew, you know, I think as an athlete, you know your body really well, and you know what you did and what you can't do anymore. So I sort of spent a year trying to come, well, I spent 2 years trying to come back and sort of probably changed the way I played. You know, I remember turning up to an England training session and my knee looked like, I certainly had a Wurzel gummage for the older viewers that'll remember that, but it was strapped up in every which way. And bizarrely, I was playing really well. But I think, you know, just by the reaction of some of my teammates, they were sort of looking at me thinking, how on earth are you walking, let alone running, let alone playing? So I think for me, it was probably, and this is something that we've echoed a lot since, that the psychological damage that injury does is probably more significant than the physical. And you know, I'm a good healer. I've come back from 13 operations, and you know, I now have a pretty fulfilled, healthy lifestyle. But I think the psychological piece was definitely the hardest thing to come to terms with. Then, of course, you go through this whole five stages of dying, don't you? I know it sounds quite melodramatic, but it is like a bereavement, because you sort of, there's this incredible anger and self-loathing because of what's happened. You know, effectively, your body has given up on you. That's a real challenge. And you sort of end up almost despising what got you there in the first place. And then obviously there's that sort of bitterness around what might have been. But, you know, I look back now, and as Christian sort of touched on, you know, I look back with nothing but very fond memories. I was very lucky. I played for England. I won a World Cup Sevens with England. I did some pretty substantial things in a short career. I think if I hadn't made that step up to play international rugby and I'd got my injury, that would have been an even harder situation for me. So I do look back now with perhaps rose-tinted glasses, but certainly very grateful for what I did achieve in a short career.
When you retired, you talked about that grieving process. What about the people around you, your loved ones, your family? Were they aware of that psychological impact on you? Did it affect them at all?
I mean, it was a very, very hard experience. You know, I think it's always a wonderful thing for an athlete to go out on their own terms after a long and fulfilled career. And it's a really special thing to do. But when you sort of go out the back door on a stretcher, feeling sorry for yourself, it wouldn't be too much to sort of say that my heart was broken, because I dreamt of playing for England since I was 7 years old, and it had always been an ambition, and I'd always been good. So I always felt it was within my grasp, and then suddenly it's snatched away. But I was very lucky, because I've got an extraordinarily close family around me, my two brothers, older brothers, Rupert and Philip, and mum and dad, who have been on every touchline since I was seven until the day, you know, it all ended. So we have an extraordinary close connection, and it's something that supersedes anything in my life. It's really quite incredible. So they were very aware of that. And then I was at the Oval one day with my eldest brother, Philip, who played at WASP with me, and we had some great memories of playing together. But he's an eminent psychiatrist, and we were chatting over a beer, and I just said, you know, I think the weirdest thing is, the physical piece is hard, but the psychological piece is much, much harder. And actually, I think people need more and more support in this area. And so it came to pass that there is now more psychological help for athletes who all talk about that depression when they have to hang up their boots, be it through end of contract or just injury. In sort of talking about how I felt to someone who knew me very well, but also was eminently qualified to do something about it, we've sort of put in place now this whole confidential counselling service for players to help them get through these incredibly challenging times. And you must remember, this is in the mid-90s, so this is a game that's unrecognisable from the extraordinary fanfare that we see now around professional sport. But the feeling is still identical. You still go through a bereavement. You still have to stop doing the thing that you love. And you have to come to terms with that and move forward at the right time. And I guess the answer lies within, doesn't it? Because I met a chap called David Boost, who many will remember had a horrific leg injury playing for Coventry against Manchester United at Old Trafford. And I think he required 18-plus operations. And then I met Sid Lawrence, a cricketer who shattered his kneecap playing for England and New Zealand. And then you sort of get a real sense of perspective of, actually, I'm not that bad. Actually, I've got quite a lot going for me. Actually, I need to really drag myself out of this, because I'm the only one who can do it.
Christian, you left the game in a very different way. You weren't in your mid-20s. You played for a long time. Did you still suffer that same sense of bereavement when it came time to retire?
Yeah, I'm the lucky version. I retired on my own terms. I knew probably in the pre-season in my last year, I have a distinct memory of watching an 18-year-old Lewis Ludlam tearing off a fitness test line and me being stood on it thinking, I don't really want to be here anymore. I'd just come off a testimonial year, 10 years at Saints, 17 years a professional, and I had everything kind of lined up for me. So I did it in the best way possible, if it is possible, and it's still hard. And I would say probably, and as well, my current role now means I wasn't completely removed from rugby. I wasn't completely removed from socializing with players. It's a big part of my job. it does suddenly hit home that you're not in that environment that you used to be. And it is a really special environment. It's a really close-knit band of brothers style job. And it gets taken away from you very, very quickly.
Did you take steps to prepare? Just had your testimonial year. You knew that you were coming to the end. Did you take steps to distance yourself from perhaps other players? Or does that happen naturally to prepare yourself for the fact that you weren't going to play anymore?
No, not really. I mean, I can only say that I was happy. I decided I was going to finish. I actually couldn't play in the last game of the season because I got injured. That was probably my kind of real dramatic moment when the physio kind of sat next to me and was like, you're not playing this weekend. Because that was, you know, I was retired by an injury. But no, and actually, when I talk about how abrupt the ending is, I mean, literally, last day I went into the club as usual, shoved all my kit into a bin bag, and walked out of the club. And that was it. There was no tunnel. There was no fanfare. There was no, you literally just walk out the club and you never go back. So it is really abrupt. And I think it's that abruptness which shocks some players. And particularly if you're in the pomp of your career, particularly if you're, you know, you don't feel like it's your time, that can only be more psychologically damaging to just suddenly have it all taken away. And yeah, going from that job where it's all encompassing, but relatively nice working hours, although it's getting more and more serious by the day, to then go straight to an office job or a very different way of life must be very, very jarring.
So you've got this harsh psychological impact. You've both ended your playing careers. How did you start to pick yourself up? Was there a mindset shift needed to positively embrace the future?
I don't think anything can prepare you for when you hand back the boots and the kit and the car keys. There is nothing, because, you know, players long before me and long after Christian have gone through it. And it's just that sort of, you know, I've become a very tragic rugby nose over the last few months listening to podcasts and what have you. And even the great Richie McCaw talks about the final whistle in the World Cup final in 2015 and suddenly thinking, oh, that's it. And that's the greatest player who's ever played the game. So, you know, I just don't think you can be prepared. But so I sort of spent probably 18 months trying to sort of work out what I wanted to do. And this would be a very typical journey for players when they finish. Now, I've always had an interest in the business of sport. So I ended up working for what now would be Premiership Rugby, just on an ad hoc part-time basis. I was doing quite a lot of media. And bizarrely, even though we're all retired, there's still triggers that bring you back into the game. I remember once I was doing ITV pitch side reporting at the World Cup in 1999. So I'd been retired 2 years plus, and I was interviewing my mate Lawrence Dallaglio. And then suddenly this smell just hit me of blood, sweat, mud. And I thought, and I was mid-interview, it sounds a bit evocative. I was like, Christ, I missed that. It was really sensory. I'd gone through a really bad experience with the Rugby Football Union. You know, I'd captained the National Sevens team. I'd sort of gone to them and said, hey, listen, I've missed out on a contract at WASS. I've had to pay my medical bills. Can you help? And the Blazer Brigade there just sort of turned their nose up and said, no, we can't. So bugger off. And that suddenly became a real inspiration for me and still is. You know, it's a driver to try and help players who are in unfortunate positions, as I was. And suddenly this sort of idea of the Players Association sort of came to me, and fortunately I was in a position to do something about it and met with the Professional Cricketers Association, learned an awful lot from Richard Bevan there, who's now at the League Managers Association. So it was a sort of a very slow, I guess, piecing together what I wanted to do, what I was good at.
Did you know that you were good at those things, i.e. offering a leadership and support role via the RPA? Were those skills that you already had when you were playing?
I didn't have a clue. I mean, some would say I still don't have a clue, but I think the business of sport fascinates me and always has done. And even when I was a young guy growing up, I was always interested in how sport works, the economics. But I think it was more about being well organized, making sure the players had a voice, being relentless. You know, a lot of the transferable skills that we talk about in sport are true today as they have been for the last 200 years. You know, people who have a vision, purpose, are dynamic. I've always been vocal. I can make people see reason, I'd like to think. So that was a key part of all of this. And then slowly this thing started to emerge and morph. yeah, the first 2.5 years as the Players Association, we had no income apart from the player subscriptions. We had no funding whatsoever coming in. So I was thinking at the time, I'll do this because I believe in it. I'm passionate about it. I was inspired. But also, even if it doesn't go anywhere, I'll learn an awful lot. And I did learn an awful lot about myself, about life after rugby. So it was a great experience.
What are your objectives at the RPA? If you could just sort of summarise what you offer to a professional rugby player, how would you vocalise that?
Good question. And fun enough, we're sort of looking at all of this at the moment. And it's about ensuring that the player's voice is recognised within the game and how the game is run. You know, we talk about England being the best place to play rugby in the world. I'm not sure it is actually at the moment, based on what's happened over the last 2 years and what happens elsewhere. So there's a lot of improvement needed to actually make the play a lot better. And that's not just about pounds, shillings and pence, but that's about, you know, how the players are treated, player welfare, all of the key components of us as a players union. You know, we are advocates of the game, but we want to make sure that our members are treated as best as possible to ensure that their careers can be as fulfilled as possible, planning for life after rugby.
Touching on that, back to what you mentioned, Christian, walking out the back door at Saints, leaving the club and never really going back. Do you look at that moment or that experience with resentment at all? Or did that sort of abruptness create a positive learning experience for you?
It doesn't matter how you handle that moment, the result is the same. You will never walk back into that changing room as a player. What I'd say about my last club, my last former club, is they're brilliant at welcoming me back to the club, and they have to let me in anyway because of my job. But they've had me back several times for games, and always friendly, always welcoming, and you can always see which clubs really care about their players in how they welcome back their former players. You just can't change that moment. Being a professional athlete is an identity. It's all encompassing. If I had a bad game or the club had a bad run of results, it affected my whole life. If you won games, then you'd overlook all the bad things that were going on, all the troubles you had. It really is a lifestyle. It doesn't matter how you butter that up, it will never come back. Look, we're talking about lots of negative aspects here. After finishing, I can't count how many weddings I've missed and birthdays I've missed. Going on holiday, right, you've got 4 weeks in this window of time to go on holiday. No questions asked. Now you can book time off whenever you like. There's loads of positive aspects of retirement as an athlete.
What about your broader perspective on the world? If you say you were focused on whether or not you had a win at the weekend when you were playing, do you feel that you've got a broader, perhaps deeper perspective on life, the universe and everything now you've stopped playing?
Yeah, 100%. I'm sure my wife would agree. I am a much nicer person now. Professional sport makes you such a black and white person as to the choices you make. If I do this, will it make me win at the weekend? Is 90% of the choices you make as an athlete. And everything is black and white. It's a yes, no. It's a I will do that or I won't do that. Whereas nowadays, it's so much easier to take a broader look. And actually, in the work we do as an association, sometimes it's really a really positive step. We need to sit in their shoes for a minute here. Why are they doing this? What are we doing? How can we do it better collectively? As an athlete, you don't do that. Everything is about you, your team, and your performance. Yeah, it's nice to step away from that environment, to be honest. It's nice to not be so all-consumed at times. And life moves on. I've got 2 young kids and being able to stand on the sideline with them, watching them play football on a weekend is a much easier lifestyle than worrying about what lineouts or scrums are happening and every angle of every game I ever watch.
So a similar question to you, Damien, about perspective. This is probably a bit of a stretch, but do you look back on your injury and think of the positive outcomes of that injury? Perhaps, say, the players playing today facing the issues that they're facing, perhaps that's concussion, head injury, awareness. Perhaps if you hadn't had that injury when you were 26, 27, you wouldn't be there to support the players now. Do you look at it in that way, or is that a stretch?
100% look at it like that. And I'm a 51-year-old bloke now, and there's no doubt it's a challenging environment to have relevance for younger players, because when I was coming in and setting up the RPA, I was a teammate of a number of the leading players. So it was an easy approach. It's harder now because I'm that much older, which is where Christian, Mark Lambert, some of the younger members of our team have come in and done a brilliant job in traversing that divide, I guess. But yeah, I look back on, without getting too woo-woo, I look back on what happened to me, and I'm sort of grateful for what happened to me, because it's definitely, to Christian's point, made me a better person, undoubtedly a better person, because I was too a very selfish ass who just thought about nothing but me. So I think, yes, I look back now on the achievements we've delivered as a players' union with great pride. Sometimes it's never enough. But no, we now have a highly respected team. You know, we deliver a huge amount for players. And I always find it interesting when players come from outside of our environment into English rugby and into the RPA, and they can't get over how much we do on behalf of the players. No, I think you've got to look at it in the round. And, you know, we have some of the best protections and security in global rugby, which we're incredibly proud of. And every day we are helping players to resolve industrial issues, personal issues, and trying to ensure that they are best advised as possible on how they can move forward.
Fantastic. Thanks very much. Now, maybe that you've answered this question, but what are you most proud of with regard to the RPA? And I don't know if there's anything that stands out for you.
Two things, if I may. One is seeing the development of our team. So without embarrassing Christian, you know, we've got some fantastic younger people coming through the organization. Seeing how those people have developed is fantastic. I think I tell a story about a young man. A few years ago, I was in Carluccio's in Richmond with my parents, and one of my team came in, and he was with a player, and the player had received a sanction for illicit drug abuse. And he came over to the table and he just said, look, I just want to say thank you so much for everything Ben and the team have done for me, because if you hadn't been here, I probably wouldn't be here myself. To this day, I sort of get goosebumps telling the story. I was so shocked at what he said, but also understood exactly what he said. And I sat down with my parents and I just had a little tear in my eye, and they said, well, you know, what's wrong? And I said, well, that was me 20 years ago. That was exactly who I was. I was that young player who didn't know what was going on. I was so lost in myself, in my sport. I was so caught up in what had happened to me in a bad way that I couldn't see the wood for the trees. And I said, and as a result of us being here, we have saved that young man's life. That's a pretty strong thing for us to say, but it's true. So for all the sort of commercial wins and welfare wins, I think, you know, ultimately we've been there to put arms around players who've had some really crappy times, and been able to do that in a positive way, and hopefully leave them feeling a bit better about themselves and about the game.